Hello and welcome back to the seventh class in the 39 prohibited categories of creative labor on Shabbat, also known as our crash course on Shabbat. Tonight we will be beginning now with a continuation of the laws that are connected to the order of creation of begadim, of clothing and cloth. So the first thing we're going to begin with in terms of these laws tonight is going to revolve around melachot, revolve around prohibitions, forms of creative labor that deal with weaving. So it's worthwhile for us to discuss for a moment outside a little bit about the weaving process and how it works. I'm sure all of you have seen, at the very least, a weave pattern, although you've certainly seen weaving in everything you have, all your clothing, all the various materials that you have, except for maybe felt, is actually made by weaving. The weaving is the moving over and under of one material against another. In other words, so this way they intertwine with each other in a series of, again, one on top of the other, and so on and so on, and collected together to make this whole weaved garment. Now, there are two sets of strings, that are going to cross each other and intertwine. For the moment, the orientation is not necessarily important, but for the moment, let's call the ones going up and down the warp, and the ones going side to side the waft. Ideally speaking, the warp is the more stationary of the strings, and when I say stationary, I mean it's the one that the waft is going to weave in and out of. So in a sort of traditional type of thing, if you think back to camp where you might have made pot holders or something like that, so you would have this, you would go ahead and you would take a string and you would run it up and down across pegs so that you had a series of lines all running in parallel of each other. And then you would go ahead and you take some other yarn or some other material, and then you would go again over, under, over, under, over, under. And then you come back again, over, under, over, under, over, under, until you would create this weaved mesh material. In the case of the pot holder, something that's actually pretty thick and pretty heavy, and therefore it can protect your nice tabletops and so forth from a hot pot or something like that. The other thing that weaving is commonly used for is such as weaving baskets. In this particular sense, your warp is the various reeds that you have going in, again, the up and down direction just for orientation. And then what you're going to weave in between them one after another and create again this nice beautiful basket. So the first melacha in this process is actually, if you think back to this example that we just gave, and we'll talk a little bit more about more modern techniques and so forth in relationship to melachot as we go through. So looking at the first one though, the first thing you can think about is actually setting up on that block of wood that's got those pegs, and we'll call that the loom for now. In other words, that you go ahead and you would take the material and you would be stringing it up and down, up and down, up and down across the pegs. So this is mesech. This is the halakha. This is the particular law against stretching the threads, meaning setting up the warp. So creating the framework for weaving is what this melacha is. And what we can't do, I'm sorry, we can't start with the do's as usual on this. There really isn't too much do involved here, although I'm sure none of us is thinking, you know, sitting back and dying to go weaving on Shabbat or whatever else have you. So, again, we'll just have to deal with the don'ts. Again, so what you don't do is prepare the threads on the frame, create the warp, and you don't lay out the reeds to make a basket. So there isn't a tremendous amount here practical, but again, the same sort of thing, you know, you wouldn't be allowed to make preparations as part of the weaving process and so forth and so on. Okay, so let's continue now with the second of the melachot we're going to be looking at, is making two meshes, ba'ose shnei batei nirin, in the language of the Mishnah. Okay, in terms of setting up the threads in the way we just spoke about, now, here's the thing, it's not overly practical to be doing a lot of weaving where you've got to pass one thread over and under another thread. It's going to take a tremendous amount of time. And if you think about weaving a material from finer strings than just thicker yarns, for example, if you wanted to weave together silk or something else like that, it becomes highly impractical to be able to pull through the threads in the manner that we just described before. So what modern machinery does, and things along those lines, is they go ahead and you set up a series of, let's for the moment, just to try and simplify what the concept is, it's sort of like you have a series of strings or whatever else have you that tie around every other string in the warp. And that's on one side. Then on the other side, you go ahead and you do the exact same thing with another set of strings, so to speak, that tie to the other side. So what happens is like this. You have a situation where the warp can be pulled apart, where let's say the evens and odds are out, and then you can go ahead and pull the other way, and then the odds and evens are out. In other words, meaning that the strings can switch sides and create an open space in the middle, where then you can just pass through the WAF string all the way to the other side. It certainly would be highly advantageous to create some illustrations of this, and at some point, hopefully, I'll try and make that available on the website along with the materials for this class. But the idea is that, again, if you can sort of imagine, again, having the strings, again, in other words, what we're doing is we're taking, instead of going under and over and under, over and under, is we're just going to take, say, the odd strings and pull them up, pass through, again, the waft all the way through, and then again pull the strings through the other way, and then pass it through again. So same sort of thing. So we're the equivalent of doing the over and under, but what we're actually doing is we're moving all the strings of the warp back and forth, as opposed to trying and weaving in and out with the waft. So this setting up of a system to pull the warp threads apart and then allow the waft to pass through. Usually it's attached to something called a shuttle, which would be like, a sort of a spool that you can kind of throw across from one side to the other if you're dealing with a large loom. In that situation, setting that up is going to place it under this isor. Now, the don'ts on this, I'm sorry, there's not too much do's in this because it's not so practical for us in our present day, is to weave into a basket to hold the warps in place. So the same sort of thing. Well, in the case of weaving a basket, things are a little bit different. In this particular situation, what you would have to do is, let's say you set up your warp, you set up the pieces of reed that are going up and down. So what you would also do is you would go ahead and you would actually sort of weave in a pattern at various different points to kind of solidify the frame, in other words, made of the actual warp itself. So that sort of comes under the same category. Now, the Rambam has a different definition of this concept of Hosei Shnei Vatenirin, making two meshes. And his concept, based on the Rishami, is the concept of creating nets. That if you're actually going to tie together or bind together strings in order to form a netting material, that this would apply here as well. So therefore, you wouldn't be able to create a net on Shabbat either. And that's besides the fact that there's problems with knotting and other things, but according to the Rambam, this also falls under this particular malacha. Weaving two threads, va'orek shnei chutim. So again, this is the actual process, the actual practical form of weaving, and in fact, we have something here that's a little bit more practical now, and it gets a little more practical as we go on. It's the creation of fabric through the passing of a waft thread over or under the warp threads. So again, it's the actual final processing of moving the waft through the warp. So what can't you do here? As we said, pass the shuttle with the weft through the separated threads. Okay, so that would be the first thing that comes up and that along those lines. The second thing is in addition to that, you can't do this other malacha, which is going ahead and they would have sort of like this comb that they would be able to place that would kind of go in between the warp and allow them to push down the threads. And this is actually a tolda of, a second level subcategory underneath weaving two threads. But they would place this comb and they would use it to push down the threads and therefore pack them together so that you'd have a nice tight weaved garment or piece of material. So pushing down the threads in that way is going to also be a sur under that category. So in addition, here's the more practical of the particular don'ts under this particular category, is You know, if you, let's say for example you're on Shabbat, you're walking, and then all of a sudden, as you walk by something, a little nail or something else like that, it goes ahead and snags your pants or your dress or something like that, God forbid, and it starts to pull out one of the threads. Now, here's the thing. If you go ahead and you take that material and you kind of start to massage the material and try and stretch it in such a way so the snag kind of begins to pull into the material, then in that situation, you're actually weaving back in the string that came out. And that would fall under this category of weaving and would be asur. It would fall under this asur. So here, this is practical. I mean, you know, especially if you're wearing like a suit jacket or something like that, it certainly happens here and there. And while it does not a perfect solution to fix a snag, it does often make it look a lot better than a hole or a piece of string sticking out. So that would fall under that category. And again, it would be asur. Okay, so let's take a look now at the next of the melachot, and this is the last one connected with weaving. And this is vahaputzea shnei chutim, and that is the dividing or removing, you know, taking out of the two threads. What is it referring to here? Well, it's the detaching the finished material from the loom. If you recall, we had the warp again stretched out over these pegs, and then we were using the waft going back and forth through the material, again going ahead and creating our nice weave. Now you want to pull that finished material off of the loom. So the process of pulling it off of the loom and again separating it out from there, that whole process is again it fall is this particular asur. Okay, so this is one way of understanding by the Rishonim of what the Isur is of Avotzea Shnei Chutim, is dividing two threads. There is, though, another way of understanding this, and that has to do with fixing a mistake. Now, if there's any kind of mistakes in the weaving process, even something small, so that sort of compounds things. And what ends up happening is that you get this material now that might be beautiful everywhere, but it's got some single flaw in the midst of the material, and all of a sudden the whole thing, therefore, loses value. So it is a great concern, and therefore, during the process of weaving, the professional would go in if he saw a mistake, and he'd be expert in this, and he would go ahead and he would fix it. There's also another way of understanding this particular melacha of dividing two threads, and that has to do with the unweave to reweave in a patch. Meaning that in the times of the construction of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, they would be creating the materials, they're creating the curtains, and what would happen is sometimes the curtains were fairly large, and you wanted to put together two pieces of material into one. So you weren't allowed to just sew them together. They had to be a single continuous piece of material. So in order to accomplish that, you would unweave part of the material, and then of each piece, and then you would then weave those pieces together with each other and create a one single seamless piece from start to finish. So that, according to these other Rishonim, is what it means to be when the Mishnah says Vapotzei Shnei Chutim, dividing two threads. So what can't you do? Well, you can't tighten the threads of the warp. So you can't do that. You can't repair a broken thread. In other words, try and again retwist the thread together in a way that it'll be. Here's something practical. You can't tear apart a cotton ball. This falls under this issur. Also, pulling out a hang thread. It's not too uncommon at all that a lot of svarim come with a nice little ribbon, for example, that might be coming out of the binding. And very often, somehow or another, these ribbons start to unravel. So grabbing hold of the string and pulling it and unraveling that would be asur, and that would fall under this particular malacha of Avapotzei Shnei Chutim. Similarly speaking, you know, again, pulling out you have a thread that's hanging from your pants or something else like that. You know, that commonly happens. You're putting on your clothing and you have this string, you know, again, this thread that's weaved in, and you're just gonna you end up pulling it out or something like that. Those all fall under this isur. Same thing goes for unraveling a string. In other words, if you have a string that's, you know, again, like a, for example, like the tzitzit or something like that, and, you know, again, fraying it, that would also fall under this isur. Okay, now getting into things that are a little bit more practical, we'll specifically look now at kosher, knotting, and also matir, which is untying. Okay, so let's deal with kosher first. Knotting. So what is it? It's the twisting of one pliable object around another to form a craftsman's knot, called a kesher uman. We'll discuss what this is in a bit, or a permanent knot, a kesher shelkaima. So the idea here is that you are not allowed to form a knot that is not easily undone over the course of its normal use. In other words, either because it's this, again, specialized knot that requires some training to it and therefore has this ability to remain permanent or maintain its purpose in a very calculated manner. Or again, this permanence from the perspective of long-term permanence, which means that it is designed to last more than 24, designed and intended to last more than 24 hours. Okay, so let's begin the do's, as we usually do. First of all, what can you do? You can make temporary knots, like a necktie, a slip knot, which is called an aniva. In other words, that's again these very simple type of knots where you sort of wrap it onto itself and you have a little loop that you can go ahead and pull and it sort of tightens. But if you would grab both sides of the string and just pull, well, it actually, you'd have nothing. It would just unravel right there. And then, or a bow tie, which is called an aniva agabe kesher, which is the idea is you make a small single knot, and then on top of that, you place, again, this sort of slip knot type situation. Okay, so making a knot that is, again, in other words, in this case, we're talking about these temporary knots. You have no intention that they should last more than 24 hours. And again, they're not specialized, or they're not knots that are intended, or they're not tied in a permanent fashion, in other words, either. So it's both intention and also not of a permanent type. Now, if the knot, though, that you're going to make, though, is a double knot, or any of these permanent style knots, even though you don't have intention for it to last for more than 24 hours, nevertheless, the fact that it was made in a fashion that's calculated to stay for more than 24 hours, again, which would make it like a permanent, again, a craftsman, kesher uman, that has permanence in its intention for the life of that knot. So that, again, that's going to therefore be asur. But if you were to tie a loose double knot, in other words, you had one knot. So, for example, you're talking about like you had a coat or something like that, and you had a single knot, and then you had a very loose second tie on that that kind of left it sort of hanging over there. This is not, again, you didn't finish it off into a tight double knot. That is going to be mutar then, again, because it's sort of loose there and will come undone on its own. And again, it wasn't bought together to form that solid double knot, which would make it the kesher uman, and it's not permanent, and therefore be permissible. One thing that may be a bit surprising is that according to most poskim, the using of metal twist ties, you know, like if you have a bag and you go ahead and then you wrap the metal twist tie and then you twist the metal twist tie in order to seal it upon the bag, according to many poskim, that's a sur, that's not allowed. But what would be allowed, though, is you could take the metal twist tie and you could wrap it around in a circular motion, in other words, without ever twisting it on itself, but just sort of wrapping around the neck of the particular bag or whatever else have you in order to prevent it from opening. That would be mutar. Okay, what can't you do in terms of knotting? Well, what you can't do is make a ring loop knotted through the nose of a camel for leading it. Now, all of us, I know, we have our camels, and we're concerned about whether or not putting a hole in its septum in its nose to pass through a ring is going to harm it and hurt it. Well, it does create a little uncomfort when first done, but it actually is quite all right. And, of course, why do we do this? Because we want to be able to lead our camels around without a problem. In other words, this knot forms a permanent ring inside the nose that, therefore, we can hook up other things to it and make use of it. So it's tied in a permanent, long-term fashion. And the knot that's used, therefore, also in order to create this permanence, is called a kesher shelkaima. It's called a kesher uman, a craftsman knot, which is used there. So that would be a sur. These are examples that are being brought down in the Mishnah and the Gemara and so forth, so that's why they're being brought here. Make a ring loop knotted through the bow of a boat for fastening it ashore. It's the same idea. Is again, you're creating this permanent ring that's tied, meaning you're creating permanent knots that are, again, of a craftsman-level workmanship. In other words, that therefore teaching us, again, these lessons of what we can't be doing, which is craftsmen and permanent knots. So, any knot cannot be made that holds tight and will not become undone on its own accord over normal use. Meaning to say that they're knots that are created with a specific purpose to remain tight for long periods of time, or a calculated period in a strong, fashion that doesn't normally come undone and things like that. Meaning it's either this craftsman knot, in other words, this calculated type of knot, that calculated permanence, or again, created with intention of permanence, in Keshul Kaima. So, on top of that, again, making a double knot is certainly going to be under that. It's a calculated long-term knot. Now, one thing that people might not have realized is that even making a single knot can also fall under this same category. So, for example, if you were to take a garbage bag and do an overhand tie on itself into one single knot in the bag, so it's sort of, you can kind of hang it up by that one knot, one single twist, that is asur, because of the fact that it can't come undone under itself. It's calculated to remain there in a permanent standpoint. The same thing would go, for example, like at the ends of a string, in other words, that you wanted to prevent it from coming through like a hood or something like that. That same sort of thing. That single knot on itself is asur. It does fall under this issur of making a kesher, of making a knot. Similarly speaking, even if you're creating knots or making knots for the sake of a mitzvah, that's asur. So to tie tzitzit is going to be asur. You're not allowed to do that. Even to reinforce a knot or to strengthen a knot. So for example, if the tzitzit at the end of one of the knots is starting to come undone or something like that, you're not allowed to tie. So again, reinforcing the tzitzit or anything else like that, that's going to be a problem. Again, tying a garbage bag shut with one knot, I think we just mentioned. Tying a garbage bag together with a double knot, the same sort of thing. Even though that's going to be incinerated perhaps in the next 24 hours, your knot is of a permanent fashion and intended to be as permanent for the length of its existence in this world. And therefore, this is asur. Tying a bow tie, even though, we always think about the idea of shoelaces and things like that as being all right, well, tying shoelaces is fine, provided, of course, you're the type of person that doesn't leave your shoes tied for more than a year. So, again, so that's going to be an issue. And, if you're the type of person that never ties and unties your shoes, you have a problem on Shabbat if they become untied. So it's certainly worthwhile to make sure that at least Erev Shabbat, you untie and tie your shoes, so that, again, it's not this sort of permanent thing. Also, again, the idea of tying a bow tie, again, it doesn't mean all of a sudden that everything's okay. Now, it might be the case in a slip knot, there's not much of a problem, but here, it's actually a single knot with a slip knot on top, and therefore, it's a little bit more strict, and therefore, any bow tie that's tied with the intention of lasting for more than 24 hours would be asur. So, if you were, for example, to even tie a necktie with the intention of the type of person that never unties it, that's a problem. And the same thing goes if you happen to be wearing a tichel and covering your hair with that sort of garment that would then be tied in the back or under the hair or else have you. That again, if you just slip this garment on and off your hair all the time, that's an issue. So it has to be that you tie and untie in order for it to not be this 24 hour, in other words, with the intention of more than 24 hours. So again, when it comes to knots, again, knots are either completely asur, completely mutar, or in the middle here, which is the bow tie. The bow tie means, and then the 24 hours matters. When it's a completely asur knot, meaning double knots, no matter what your intentions are, everything is not allowed. When it's talking about a single knot, in other words, this knot that just undoes itself when pulled or left alone or whatever else have you kind of thing, in other words, no professional permanence intended or anything else like that, so that those are completely permitted. But when we're talking about here in the middle, again, the situation of a single knot with a slip knot on top, so that's going to be completely asur if it's intended for more than 24 hours, or going to be mutar if it's intended for less than 24 hours. We already talked about twisting a metal twist tie closed in a bag is asur. Same thing, tying a balloon shut. We talked about water balloons before. Why can't you play with them in terms of soaking? But even an air balloon, again, if you blew it up and you now wanted to tie it, you're tying it on itself and you're creating a permanent knot. Reinserting the lace in the hood of a jacket is asur, and the reason why it's not allowed in this case is because of the a gzerah, meaning a rabbinical ordinance that a person might come to go ahead and again tie knots into this lace in order to prevent it from coming in and out, and therefore that would fall under this isur. And the last group that we're dealing with now is matir, which is untying. So undoing any knot that fits under the previous category. So it's pretty straightforward. Again, if you can't make the knot, you can't untie the knot. So therefore, you again, let's do the dote just for a second, untie any permanent knots. So let's look at the one exception. And this is, of course, interesting. And it's very practical. And that is that if you, by mistake, happen to have made a knot, and I'm not talking about by mistake, meaning, in other words, for example, you forgot it Shabbat and you made a knot. For example, if you went ahead and you double knotted your garbage bag, or you did the single knot we're talking about, you don't untie that knot now as a result of what you did. You leave it alone and you've done what you've done, and then you do tshuva. You commit that you're going again in the future not to do this and be more careful and so forth and so on. But here we're talking about a situation where, for example, a person is tying his shoes and by mistake he makes a wrong turn. It ends up being a more permanent style knot. A person will be allowed to untie that. There's no intention in that knot that it be permanent in any fashion, and the whole thing was a mistake. So you certainly can't call that a kesher uman, the knot of a professional. So in that particular situation, not a problem to untie this unintentional knot. When it comes to shoes, sometimes, of course, if they're wearing them for a long time and that sort of thing, they can get knotted. Now, this is a little bit different. I mean, there is, again, this sort of sits on that borderline between, permanent and non-permanent and everything else. So here, if you're in a situation where you don't have any other shoes and you have no other options and it bothers you considerably and you can't pull your shoes on and off, or you can't, again, they're not really usable now in the state they are, then the Chachamim, the rabbis, relaxed in terms of any gzerah here, and they... So again, so in this situation like that, you are able to go ahead and untie the shoelaces in order to be able to put them on properly and tie them and everything else. But any other knot, which again has this permanent status to it, you would not be allowed to untie. Even if the knot was, again, of this situation, of this bow tie type situation, remember, if that bow tie, even if you don't intend it to be for 24 hours, but you leave it for 7 days, In other words, even you intentionally leave it tied in that state, even though you would have, again, intention to tie and untie, and you're certainly not thinking about it in terms of any kind of permanence, it's sort of just a sort of like a fastener, like a snap or something like that. Again, if you leave this type of knot for 7 days, therefore it shows your intention that it's going to be permanent, regardless of the fact that you left it with some sort of non-permanence. So that wraps up for this evening, the process of weaving and the process of knotting. And God willing, Bezrat Hashem, we will pick up next week, Bezrat Hashem, and God willing, with our additional efforts in the Shmirah of Shabbat, God willing, we will see, and we will be meriting to see in our times quickly, Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Yemenu Amen.